Hey, welcome to The Look Back, my pandemic podcast, or hopefully post-pandemic podcast, broadcasting here from the basement of Newman Media Studios. My name is Keith Newman, and I'm the host of The Look Back. And this is a place where we have some fun conversations with old friends, a few newsmakers, and some rule breakers, all in the name of sharing insights and experiences along with a little bit of levity and fun. I hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you're so inclined, or perhaps even open to some bribery, you'll share this podcast with some friends who might also enjoy it. Let's go on to the show. Well, hey, we have Annabelle Chang, the director at Waymo, who's fighting the big fight with the government and public policies and agencies, and she's trying to make driverless cars a reality with Waymo. When we've seen in the Bay Area, a lot of those driverless cars that I know when you come to those for the first time, it's quite a shock. And Annabelle's trying to make that a huge reality. So Annabelle, welcome to the Look Back podcast.
Thank you, Keith. Excited to be here. And yes, I know that, Keith, you probably get to see a lot of our fully autonomous cars in San Francisco, but we also have it up in Arizona as well. Largest autonomous driving territory in the world in Arizona right now.
So what does that look like in terms of how many cars or miles or how you measure that?
Yeah, we have 180 square miles of area that we serve that in any of those, that location, you can call a fully autonomous car via your Waymo One app. And so let me give you an example. So you fly into Phoenix, Sky Harbor Airport, you can hail a Waymo, head downtown, or maybe go out to Scottsdale if that's where you're going on vacation with your family, and get around all over the place and just do your errands, go out for a night out. And let me just be super clear about what that experience looks like.
Yeah,
there is no one in the driver's seat. We have the Waymo driver driving you around.
Right. It's a shock when you do it for the first time. Annabelle, what do you put forward as the reason why we need to move to this? There's several that come to mind, but in your perspective, how does Waymo make our cities operate more efficiently, or our individual people operate more efficiently? What do you put forward as the proposition?
Yeah, it's actually a personal story. I was a prosecutor in San Francisco for a stint. And during that period of time, I helped to prosecute hundreds of drunk driving cases, driving under the influence cases. And you know, you realize that in these types of cases, these are just regular people that might have made a mistake and, you know, had maybe a couple too many drinks and took their allergy medicine and got behind the wheel. And what Waymo does and what autonomous driving technology does is it takes out that equation. You don't have to make that mistake. You have someone, the Waymo driver coming to pick you up at the tap of a button. And it provides that convenience and ease. And just think about, you know, Keith, how many times where you've had maybe a sleepless night, jet lagged, or, you know, had a really rough week at work and you have to drive and you're distracted, you're tired, you know, but you're at the same time as a human driver still making thousands of little decisions.
Yes.
You're tired, right? And you don't have to worry about that with fully autonomous car technology.
No, and let's go ahead and be honest. I've occasionally had a couple margaritas and it was questionable if I should have gotten behind the wheel. But today's inclination might be to call a Lyft, right? Where I could say, you know, take me. So how does that proposition change from a economic standpoint or a social standpoint with Waymo?
Totally. And that's a really good question. And I have had my amazing time at Lyft as well. I think that autonomous car technology takes it even one step beyond, right? For sure, you're helping to take, you know, human decision-making out of the driving equation. And let me kind of walk you through that. Just imagine yourself behind the wheel again. You know, you see maybe like 200 degrees around you, maybe, right? Like really it's like 180, but like occasionally you look over your right shoulder, occasionally look over your left shoulder and you look in the rear view mirror, right? And there's side view mirrors. But a Waymo sees 360 24/7 all the time and sees three football fields around. Like, no human can do that.
That's amazing. That is truly amazing.
And so that's like just that's the difference. That's the difference that the technology can provide. So if you think of a steep four-way intersection in San Francisco, you know, when you're climbing up the hill and you're kind of inching forward past the stop sign, for anyone who's been a tourist in San Francisco or, you know, resident, you know this experience quite well. You really don't know if there's another car coming up on the other side of the hill, and that's why you're inching above. The Waymo knows. We absolutely have LiDAR and radar that can see over the top of the hill and know that there is absolutely no car coming, or there, yes, there is a car coming.
So I love this story. I love where we're going with this technology too. What are the metrics that we look at to see the overall adoption of this and where it's coming? How soon will this be 20% of the driver, you know, work? What would I call it? The driver?
Something. Yeah, it's interesting because I think what we're seeing is in places like Arizona, where we've had our fully autonomous technology available and kind of people see it commonly around them, there's a very, if you're in the car, like people don't stop and stare anymore because it's so common. They see it day in and day out. But it's still a small percentage of the driving, you know, population, I would say. But more and more people are also relying on new technologies in their personal car. So we call that advanced driver assistance, which is different than autonomous driving technology, right? Think about cruise control, think about sort of like lane keeping. All of these technologies are there to help us become better drivers. And then autonomous driving technology is taking that equation out for you. Like if you don't want to drive or you can't drive, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's a great point too, the can't drive element. There's a huge population there. Annabelle, you're amazing.
Or shouldn't drive, right?
This is amazing and interesting in so many ways, but you're also faced with those challenges, right? There's the reports of accidents, or there's reports of just, hey, we want to protect our fleet of taxis or even the Ubers of the world. What are the biggest challenges that you're facing right now to broader adoption?
Yeah, I think it's, I think a lot of people still think it's science fiction. Right. Yeah. Even if I were to talk to someone in Chicago or Boston or Washington, D.C., you know, like a lot of very important policymakers there, they might not be aware that this technology is up and running and available and American made, American designed, American innovated. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, I think that most people think it's decades off. And what Waymo is trying to show is, no, it's here. It's here today. You can fly into Arizona and take a ride completely openly in Phoenix. Right. And we're trying to get there in San Francisco, but we still are facing some regulatory blocks right now.
Yeah. Well, they got the right person. By the way, my faithful audience at the Look Back, please know Annabelle is not one to shrink from challenges. If I recall your history correctly, you went to Alaska Airlines, which was an interesting step. And Alaska's, for those of you not familiar with the airline, they've got a great reputation as one of the best operators in the game. You had a fantastic run there. And before that, you were at Lyft. And you were at the early days, I would say, of Lyft.
Yeah, absolutely. Less than 150 employees there at the time. So it was a small, just beginning to scale. And it was, I laugh because when I told my family I was joining this startup with the pink mustache, I genuinely thought like there's a 50-50 chance that in 6 months this place isn't going to be around. But seems really cool and exciting and interesting. And so like, let me give it a shot.
Yeah, you picked a great one because one, lots of challenges, you know, totally innovative space, obviously major competition, socioeconomic adjustments to that economy. And yet, you know, they go public and it's a fantastic story. Now they're having some challenges today, I guess, but you know, we look at that and go, that's part of the game too. Uber's had its share of challenges and now it's rocketing back on paper or what I perceive. Still kind of funny. I don't get the feeling like the whole world of the Uber ecosystem is delighted with Uber, but maybe a comment for another day. When you look at your career trajectory, is it something that you're trying to look in the world of transportation in particular, or the case of a business that has some interesting challenges, or do they just present you with an opportunity and it's an interesting fit? How do you evaluate new opportunities like the ones you've taken on?
Yeah, super interesting. If I were to guess, if I were, 15 years ago, I would have never thought I would have been in the world of transportation for this long and really become one of the, I would say, active stakeholders in creating transportation policy, novel transportation policy. It genuinely feels a little bit accidental. However, I think that once I had the opportunity at Lyft, it just kind of began to, these types of opportunities began to present themselves, and I had developed expertise and frankly, a passion for it over time, right? It's about connecting people, giving them access, getting to the places to where we want to be. When I was at Alaska, it was more, I was on vacation mode, thinking about all the exotic places that Alaska Airlines could get you to, and also about business travel. And then, now it's a little bit about your daily life, right? You don't necessarily hop on a plane on a daily basis, but you do. Most people, I would say, have some need to get into a car on a fairly regular basis during the week. Otherwise they're relying on transit or, other like bikes. But I think for most Americans, the car is still very much the typical way that people travel.
Yeah. Until you show me your next innovation, whether it's at Waymo or your next job, the flying car, that's inevitably next, right?
I mean, I'm very intrigued. I certainly know people in that space. I have not laid eyes on one in flight. I've seen them because, living in Silicon Valley, you see them. So I've definitely seen them and I'm quite intrigued. And, I think there's something to be said about I like big thinkers. I like people who want to see the world in a way beyond what we currently have in place.
Well, that might be a prescription for your friends at Lyft or Waymo to look into those things or somebody different, I guess. When I look at the Waymo fleet, are those electric cars?
They are. They're all electric.
And are you prepared to scale that nationally? Or how do you build out a go-to, cross-country model?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem. And that's a good question, Keith, because certainly I know the federal government has this in mind with all of the funding through the Infrastructure Act. What I would say is, if you want to scale, you have to have the charging. But the charging takes decades, actually, to put into place because it relies on the grid. And the grid is not necessarily robust or built. It certainly wasn't built for a world of all electric cars that need to tap into that. So I do think there's a little bit of a chicken and egg issue, especially because there's going to be personal cars. And in California, you have medium duty, trucks will have to get there and then eventually heavy duty. And so this is frankly, policymakers saying, if we put this rule in place, it will happen. And yes, however, you kind of have to build the building.
That's funny. I haven't thought about that, but reframing the argument a little bit, you hear, Pete Buttigieg talking about, infrastructure spending and programs. I always thought that meant fix the potholes on the freeway, but in many cases it's, no, we need to electrify for fast charging for a fleet of automobiles, but also larger vehicles, even buses and mass transit things. And trying to figure out how all this gets interconnected to save our infrastructure.
And it's interesting because I think, just even 5-6 years ago, electric vehicles were a little bit of a novelty. Certainly you're like, that's interesting. Like that little, kind of unusual looking EV. And now they are growing in popularity and people see a lot of benefit. Sometimes you can get a better parking spot if you have an EV, right? Yeah. And so And especially if you are in a situation where your work charges your, you can get a free charge at work and then you can charge at home. I mean, there's a lot of benefits here, but I will say, I think that the infrastructure and sort of the building blocks necessary for wide scale EV adoption in the short term is going to be challenged. It's going to be challenged for sure.
Okay. Well, before we get too heavy, I want to take another scenario. Okay. I'm driving through San Francisco and I run through an intersection and I bump into a driverless car. How do I exchange my driver's license with that car?
Well, we do have contact information. In that situation, it's definitely your fault, Keith.
Yes. I would guilty. I just need to get your information. I'll have my insurance take care of it.
Yeah. So if that happens, our car will pull over and the windows will roll down and we will have someone in what we call rider support, but it's in this case, it's to talk to you to get your insurance information or for us to give you insurance information.
God forbid in all cases, but I ask the weird questions sometimes, Annabelle.
Yeah. No, it's totally fair. We don't have a little robot like that comes out and like gives you an insurance card.
Could you imagine my avatar pops up or something? Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's on its way. It sounds logical as heck. It just, if for those of you that haven't seen it or experienced it, get ready. It's coming to a city near you. If I understand Annabelle's track record and her goals with the company, we see a lot of Waymo out here and I think it's fantastic. I even got my little discount card that I've used a couple times.
Oh, good.
Thank you, Waymo, for getting me around town. And I'm definitely into seeing us continuing to use technology for benefit and innovation. Let's switch gears here now, because I kind of, you know, call this the look back for a reason. I find an executive like yourself who's done some amazing things. I really am in awe of a lot of your accomplishments. Where do you look when you look back yourself? And I know you're on a busy track still, but when you look back on your career, what are some of your personal highlights?
Yeah, I definitely think that the Lyft experience was transformative for me. And I commend the two founders, John Zimmer and Logan Green, for having created a really incredible culture at a small company when I joined and then had it scale. And it was during a very, very tough two-man competition, I would say, and obviously Lyft and Uber head-to-head. And, you know, there were temptations to take an approach that might have been more hostile or less ethical. And I think the leaders of Lyft really, really instilled in us a passion for the work, a passion for the drivers, a passion for our riders, but also a passion for doing the right thing. And I really developed some lifelong friendships from that experience, learned a lot. I crisscrossed the country. There was one time where I was like in four or five states in 1 week and I had to really think about, where am I right now? which airport do I need to go to? I'd be in
Las Vegas. Remember that game, where's Waldo? Or
yes, yeah, where in the world is Carmen San Diego? But it was like, where in the United States is Annabelle Chang? Yes. It was a kind of wild experience learning to scale a company. And like I said before, I remember this very vividly. I was in Virginia Beach and speaking to some regulators and, Lyft didn't exist yet, really. It didn't exist in Virginia at the time. And so I had to show them screenshots and like PDF pieces of paper of how the app would look like and how it would work, and it was just, it was all conceptual. People didn't get it at the time. And so I had to physically show it to them on pieces of paper, right? Which is so funny to think about now, just a few years later, because it's so commonplace.
That is fantastic. And I think the takeaway for a lot of the young entrepreneurs who follow this podcast, I think there's a great lesson there in how do you proceed fast, but smart or ethically, as you said too, or not take the necessarily easier route, but do things that you'll be proud of for years on, so you can look back and smile proudly, you know.
And I would say the other experience that I genuinely loved was working on Capitol Hill. I was a staffer, a young staffer, almost right out of college. I worked in Sacramento, but then I also worked in DC. And it was very much a bucket list moment for me. You know, imagine kind of running around with lions of the Senate at the time, John McCain, you know, was running around. Ted Kennedy was there. So you see these people that you learn in history, and you know, they're human, and literally standing next to you in the cafeteria line.
In most cases, they're human. Yes.
Yes. And usually I will say that if you are standing in line next to a senator, you let the senator go first because they have more important business than a young staffer.
Well, maybe I should keep an eye on you going into that direction.
Well, I certainly loved it. It was a really,
you want to take Pete's job?
Well, you know, you got to dream big.
I like that. Listen, I'm not putting anything past you. And speaking along those lines, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I know you're involved in Chief. You're a founding member in that organization, something I strongly support and believe in too. But I'll let you describe it to the audience here, what Chief is and what it represents.
Yeah. And so Chief started in New York, and then they were growing their sort of, I would say, membership around the country. I think the second city might have been Los Angeles and the third is San Francisco. It was during COVID, and I am a extroverted person, and I was feeling, and I was a new mother, and, you know, you just suddenly are trapped in your apartment with a small child, and like everyone's on video screen, and my husband and I are both on conference calls, and I needed connection with other humans. And particularly in the airline industry, it was it is a very male dominated industry, as you can imagine. And there were very few female executives in that space that I could speak frankly to and ask insight from. And particularly being a mother, a young mother, that was, I mean, in the world of Alaska Airlines and the airlines, you maybe can pick out a handful of people sort of in that same situation, life circumstance. And so Chief came about right at that time where I was really seeking that. And I was put in a cohort with other women who came from all different fields, actually very interesting. I mean, like from food to software to, you know, hardware to fashion. And that was really great. We did at the time only meet virtually, but I found it to be just a nice way to connect with others, whether it was about managing people in your team or managing up, or learning to, you know, develop your executive brand or presence, or, you know, executive messaging if you had to present to a board. And so there is a need and a space for organizations like Chief that help. I mean, I come from an immigrant family, Keith, where no one had ever navigated the world of corporate America ever, or even frankly, like this Western corporate culture, right? And so I had to learn on my own. Just that's it. I had to learn on my own. I don't have a network to an old network to tap into, our family network. It's just you just kind of make it. Yeah. And so it's nice that we can help kind of create some of these structures that help give people that support.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. What do you tell those people that are coming into, you know, their first job or out of college or their second job, that but they seem like they have a knack for entrepreneurship, a knack for doing a startup, a passion with for an idea? What's some advice you give them in terms of taking things forward? I think between the combination of your lived experience and your education and your dealing with, you know, large infrastructure, small infrastructure challenges, it seemed like you'd be a great mentor for this demographic.
Well, I appreciate that. And I love mentoring. I try to stay active in that space. I'm on the board of the YMCA of San Francisco and try to give back through that. But I will say this, there's two things that I think being a young entrepreneur, you should think about. One is that in taking the risks, it is the best time. There's no better time to take those risks when you are young, particularly if you don't have, you know, another mouth to feed yet, and you don't have like school schedules to have to navigate, and maybe your schedule is your own. Like that is the best time. Like take advantage of it. And I think it is okay to fail. It is 100% okay to fail if you have tried. You know, truly tried and committed to it. There are times where I've tried things and it's just like, that actually wasn't my cup of tea. Or I tried it, I loved it, and it still wasn't my cup of tea, right? Like the experience I would give is my time at the prosecutor's office. I had a blast. It was an incredible opportunity. You're interacting with members of the public, you're interacting with judges, you're interacting with the criminal justice system, like raw and up and in your face. But I realized, as energizing and as both inspiring and demoralizing as it was, I could not see myself doing this for the rest of my life. And so it was, again, kind of like my, you know, my bucket list example is like, put it in my bucket list. It was like the thing that I wanted to try. I tried it. I moved on.
I have a question to follow up on that, Annabelle. How do you embrace failure? Meaning we failed. So we're instinctually going to feel crappy about that. But at the same time, we know there are benefits to that. So how do you embrace it and in proportion?
It's like, it's kind of like it's more friction than embracing, you know, I would say like the example I would give is that, Alaska Airlines, I was really surrounded by some very incredible leaders, and, Brad Tilden, the CEO, really, really hammered in the message of humility, meaning you have to know that you're not going to know all information and that, you have to be humble enough to ask for the information and take in new information and accept that you might be wrong, that you were actually doing things the wrong way for a very long time, and that there was room for improvement. And for me, that leadership model of humility really is so important. And it's hard. It's not natural to say, oh, I was wrong, or like, boy, did I totally call that wrong. And some people don't, some people still don't, right? Like some people make a mistake and they reject that the mistake had anything to do with them. But I will tell you what, you won't like working with those people, whether, you know, they're on a founding team with you or they are your boss or they are your direct report. You want people who can, as Ray Dalio says, is embrace reality and deal with it. And so I think that is very much my view is you have to embrace what has just happened and deal with the consequences of that. And there are always lessons to be learned, whether it's like, oh boy, should I avoid that next time or avoid that person, or avoid that scenario? But it's not easy by any means. The other thing that the other piece of advice I would give to young entrepreneurs or people on a founding team is, there's nothing that you're above doing. Meaning if you're in a startup and you're like one of five people and the trash is piling up, take out the trash. You know, if there's like seven pizza boxes, be the good person that takes the pizza boxes out. Yeah. And I say that because of the experience, again, I learned at Alaska Airlines. They actually required every single executive to clean a plane. You know, with all the other folks.
I love that.
You know, like you have to clean the plane. You have to, and we had to call up regular flyers every month and just check in on their flight experience. So you have the customer service experience, you have the cleaning of the plane experience, because how can you be an executive if you don't know everything that's happening within your operation? And what, you know, I would say like the most frontline folks are doing for your product or your service. And so for any entrepreneur, You have to know that part. If you need to go to the factory, you need to go see the factory floor. If you're a, you know, a customer facing software, like, you need to be on the line with your salespeople or your customer support folks and see what they're saying.
So many great lessons, Annabelle. I can go on, and I know we can continue this conversation for quite a while, but I have too much respect for your schedule and what you have between the kids and the life and the Waymo and the YMCA and probably your next flight on Alaska. Thanks for spending a little bit of time. Great seeing you. I miss our connections in real life, but I'll hopefully bump into you soon. I'll think about you on my next Waymo ride as well.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it, Keith. And I will say to you that once you've been in a Waymo, it becomes very natural. It's no longer jaw-dropping. It's like, this is the way things ought to be.
Yeah. Well, we always have to take that photo, right? That is to whatever you call photo. It's a blast. But continued success. I look forward to watching you on this magical ride.
Perfect. Thank you, Keith.
Thanks a ton. Thanks for listening to The Look Back. We do appreciate your support, welcome any feedback, and would love it if you would subscribe to this podcast and even consider sharing it with some of your friends. For more information and other cool info, check us out at newmanmediastudios.com.